This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week, we are brought to you again by the Friends of the Magic Word. Those are the ones who provide their financial support with their donations and ongoing pledges, which help us to defray our various costs we have with producing this podcast week after week and giving you the kind of content that we think you enjoy hearing. And when I say we, I'm talking about the royal we. I'm sorry. I certainly do appreciate that. Thank you very much. And you can find out more information when you go to themagicwordpodcast.com and you can click on a link there that would say, become a friend of the Magic Word. There you can find out some information, you can watch a video, and decide if it's worth at least a cup of coffee a month for you to get all of this great content week after week. Well, this week we are traveling with the microphone to the Magi Fest in Columbus, Ohio, where we visited with Jania Taylor. Jania and I have been friends for a long time, and she is friends of many magicians. She lives in the Michigan area and has a wide variety of experience where performing on stage. She had studied under Neil Foster with the Chavez School. I believe she said she's the second or third female student of Neil's. And along that line, by the way, she does talk in this episode a lot about the presentation that she gives on women in magic, from Adelaide Herman to Susie Wandas and June Horowitz and so many others. It's a wonderful project and presentation that she has, and worthy of some magic convention actually snapping her up and using that as a presentation perhaps for one of their events on the schedule. So this week, please welcome my guest from Michigan, Ms. Jania Taylor, here on The Magic Word. Have someone with me today. I've been wanting to talk with her quite some time, and we have been at conventions together. Someone who has also provided some content for convention updates whenever I do attend, particularly at Colon Magic Magi Fest in Columbus, but then, yeah, at Abbott's get-together. She is a staple there and has performed doing a lot of street magic there, as well as doing a lot of like Renaissance festival types of things, or no, not Renaissance. What would I say?
Festivals. Yeah, I do a lot of festivals. But the one you're thinking of is like a Renaissance festival, but it's an early American festival. It's set in the time period of 1776 to 18 something.
Well, we're jumping ahead, or should I say we're jumping behind, for an older festival. And someone who I think was kind of interesting, in the wintertime, when you're not doing as much magic, you are out on the streets or anything, you are actually a ski patrol.
I'm an instructor.
Okay, which is different than the patrol. Uh-huh. Okay. Please welcome Jania Taylor. Hey, Virginia.
Thank you, Scott. Nice to be welcomed.
Thank you for joining me. And one of my favorite ladies, people in the world, really, to drink martinis with. And we don't have one with us right now, which is kind of a good thing.
It might be a good thing. we tried that once.
That's right. And you're not going to hear that one. We had recorded a conversation some time ago, and yeah, that we could understand each other, but you wouldn't have understood us at the end of that. So I was going to ask you also, prior to doing ski instructing and everything for a long time, you were actually lecturing as well, and it was mainly about, as I recall, how to promote yourself. How to do a show, but it was really materials that you would use.
Right, how to market yourself. It was called Getting a Gig as a Full-Time Job.
That was it, yes. Talk a little bit about what that lecture was about, what you did in that.
Okay, well, there was no magic, but I talked about how to get more magic shows, because you have now bought all this stuff and you want to make a little bit of money with it. Mm-hmm. So it was all about, I used to do a lot of direct mail. So it was about how I put my mailing pieces together, how I got my lists. I got all my lists for free. I didn't buy any lists because they're expensive. And I had like this three-step system where I would send out maybe a flyer first, then a letter, then a postcard or something like that. So it was all direct mail, and it's all changed now because the lecture's pretty obsolete, because so much stuff can be done online with emails and MailChimp and Constant Contact.
That's right. That was back when it was still
paper.
Right, it was paper, and so I was a big tried fold flyer person. Then I didn't have to pay for an envelope. The flyer was the...
Sure, just fold it open, put a stamp on that, and you have the envelope on that. I understand how that worked, and there was another lecture that Bob Brown had put out some time ago, and I've got a... I'll see if I can remember to put a link to that video in the blog for this week's episode. But when he was in Hawaii at the IBM convention, he had allowed me to tape his lecture, and Bob has since passed. And also, the stuff he talked about is completely irrelevant to today.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I did get out of that was that you can still apply today. Is to go first class, it only costs about 10% more, but you get like 30 to 50% more exposure to that. In other words, he would say, instead of just having a regular business card, have gold leaf business card or better quality paper. It doesn't cost that much more for all that. Well, nowadays, you really don't even use business cards. Do you use business cards?
I still use a business card, and people still ask me a lot for a card.
Yeah.
When I'm street performing, they'll ask for a card.
Mm-hmm.
So I still have cards.
But you have a website, obviously.
Yes,
you
know. And this which is on my card as well, so they can get more information.
But do you put up like a QR code or something, or that people can scan that is out? I mean, that'd be one way.
Right,
when you're
that
performing.
Would be a good way. I've never done that, but I had a friend make me a QR card, and I've never ever used it. But I should when I'm out street performing. I would take people right to my website.
Right, if you just had like a sign. I mean, where are you going to be putting Magical Jane? What do you go by?
Magic Lady.
Magic Lady.
Magic Lady. Because The little kids were the one that gave me that nickname, so I ran with it. You know, they'd be like, "Oh, Magic Lady's here." They'd see me, you know, in the store, Magic Lady. So I'm like, "How am I going to use that?"
Yes, right. When you do, well, I was going to talk about the kids show in just a second, but when you're outside and street performing, and you would have Magic Lady sign, if you could have like a QR code or something that's there, people can scan that. Because instead of asking for a card, or if you're busy or talking or whatever, you can also say, I guess, during your spiel of just you can scan that. It'll take you to the website, give you all the information that you need to know.
Yeah, I should just put, because I dream big. I use a 5-gallon bucket for my tip jar for my hat.
Good girl.
I'm dreaming big.
That's right.
I could just put it on my bucket.
That's right. As you're walking around with this bucket, I can have just a big QR code that's going to be on there then, too. How do you go about asking for tips at the end? What is your tip line?
Oh, man. This is a combination of Jeff Warzak, who's a Michigan magician, and Hank Morehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Hank's the one that gave Jeff Warzak the idea and then gave him permission to write it up in like one of the MUM or something. So the very last thing that I do, I say to the audience, you want to learn a magic trick, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I want to learn a magic trick. Okay, so everybody needs to take out a dollar. You know, you have your magic prop right in your pocket. Take out a dollar. It works better, of course, with a 5 or a 10 or a 20.
Yeah.
And then I teach them the how to turn it upside down.
Yeah.
So I really don't humbug them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I say, now you make a paper tube around your thumb. Of course, I have a thumb tip on, and if you can't pull out a blue handkerchief, it means you have a fake dollar bill, and I'm collecting fake dollar bills for today's performance. And my bucket's out there, and they have their money in their hand, and they drop it right in my
bucket.
So they've
already got their money out to begin with.
Right.
I like that idea of trying to get that out. Do you work restaurants? Ever do much walk around in a restaurant?
Yeah,
hopping?
In Northern Michigan, where I'm from, I had a standing gig for 14 years. It was called the Bob Inn. It was like a 50s diner, and I worked there for every Wednesday night for 14 years in the summertime, because it's a resort area where I work, so they're going to hire me in the summer and not when it's... Mm-hmm. And I just took a call on the way here to the Magi Fest for a restaurant that's trying to start like a kids' night where they have a special kids' menu in the wintertime. They don't want to do it in the summer because they have enough business in the summer, but they want to try to create some more business in the winter, so hopefully that'll come through.
Yeah. The reason I was asking about restaurants, if you had a tip line you used, which would be different, obviously, you're not carrying a bucket around the table, you know, I would imagine.
Oh, no, I've never really kind of tried to turn a tip at restaurants. But the great thing, what happens, I noticed at the bottom, is you almost need a shield to do it. We need one person to tip you, and all the other tables see you.
Yes.
And then they think, oh, we're supposed to tip her.
Mm-hmm.
And that, when... If one person at the beginning of the night tipped me, it was going to be a good night because all the other tables saw it.
Well, if you talk about a shill, you know, one good idea, of course, the best way to make sure that you the table you're working for knows that the other tables have tipped you, and they probably should also, is if you get somebody to bring a tip over to you.
Right.
Or perhaps if you have the waiter saying, hey, this is from that other table over there.
Right.
And you could talk with the waiter, mm-hmm. and so every time you're there, they're going to realize, oh, you know. One thing that I had used for a long time, and I think is pretty subtle, and it's not begging for money, it's just... because you're not saying anything about the money, but as you're getting close to the end, you're saying, you guys have been really great. I want to show you one more thing. I don't know if I'm going to have time to show this to other tables, but you guys have been so wonderful. I'm going to do one more trick for you. You got time for one more thing? By that time, obviously, they like you, and you've engaged with them. And so that is a signal that, number one, it is your last trick. Number two, if they're going to pull out some money to give you, that's the time then they should start doing that. Because if you don't signal that and you say, that's my last trick, thanks a lot, I'm going mm-hmm. to the table, and you walk away, people are starting, I need to give him some money. They reach in their pocket, oh, he's already gone, never mind.
Right.
So this way is just kind of a little subliminal tip, if you will, of saying, I'm this is going to be my last one, I'm going to leave. And so you don't say anything if you want to give me money, just saying, you know, this, and also telling them that they're special and whatnot.
Right. So that's a good idea, too.
Just a little mm-hmm. way that you kind of end up over there. So going back then to marketing, about how that has evolved, and you don't obviously give that lecture anymore because
it's obsolete, right.
Have you kept up with, and do you advertise much, or do you have tips for social media and how you would use that to promote yourself?
Right. Well, I still still keep mailing lists. Schools.
Email lists.
Yeah, email lists. Schools, libraries, festivals, mm-hmm. local events. Mm-hmm. So I still do that, and then... I used to use, which is like a dinosaur's FileMaker Pro, but it's a great way to keep things organized. Mm-hmm. And now I think I'm going to start using MailChimp because you can really send out some really nice.
Yes.
You know, it looks like
it's like an
online flyer.
Mm-hmm. And also, people and companies have already accepted and understand what MailChimp is, so they don't consider that to be spam. It's kind of like Constant Comment.
Mm-hmm. Constant Contact.
I've mm-hmm. used Constant Contact for a long time with my corporate clients because it could get past the spam filters
right.
of some companies.
Right.
MailChimp has since gotten to have that same cachet, I think, you know, and that acceptance, if you will. So I'm able to get that through also.
Right. And I think, I kind of thinking about maybe going back to some direct marketing with a postcard and the combination, send the postcard and then
yep.
follow up with an email.
Do you always send thank you notes?
Yep.
Do you? Okay.
And that's when I ask for a letter of recommendation.
Do you still get those?
I still do.
Huh. Because that was one of the hardest things, I think, to get is for people to give you a written recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I have heard before, and I've used this also, is when you finish a show and you have your camera,
right.
your phone, and someone comes back behind the curtain or whatever, say, hey, it was a great show, I really enjoy it. So, well, wait, can you say that, you know, again? I've found probably 9 times out of 10, it's kind of like, this guy was great, I would love this show. You sound like, it's like, that's not the same enthusiasm you just gave me when you saw me a moment ago. It's like when the lights are on, all of a sudden it changes. You know?
Microphone shy or
yeah.
camera shy. Yeah.
Exactly. Or they can't state, you know, with such spontaneity they just had shown you. But have you ever used anything like that or any kind of, as far as?
I'm not good about it. I kind of like to leave my phone in the car when I'm performing. Because my dad's known to call me like 3 times in a day, you
okay.
know,
yeah.
being a difficult dad.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, he'll call me in the middle of my show. So then I forget. So I don't, then it's in my car and then I forget mm-hmm. to do it. And so I'm not good at collecting those, but it's a great thing to do. I know a lot of the guys do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I still like writing a note because so many, who gets nice real mail anymore? I think it's a little bit different. Everybody sends an email now. And
that's true. But when people do send emails, I think they get to the point. In other words, whenever we are talking, they tend to be more flowery. Or they will be talking about, hey, what's going on or whatever.
Right.
But if you're texting someone, you get to the meat of it. And same way with email,
mm-hmm.
I've got something to say. They might say, hey, how are you doing? Or it was a good show last night. But they kind of, I think, will be more succinct with that email where you can have a pull quote from
right.
an email.
Right. Right. That's true, too.
But you solicit those.
Right. Yeah. Right. But I still send him a
handwritten thank you.
Not a handwritten. It's a typed letter, And then I send a self-addressed stamp envelope because I ask for a letter of recommendations for your comments and criticisms. All can't be nice.
Yeah.
And I get a lot of those back still on people's letterheads.
So you do send them a form to complete, basically.
Right.
Okay.
Well, it's not even a form, but I send them a self-addressed stamp envelope because that's already done for them. All they have to do is write the letter.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
They have to do is write a letter and put it in the mailbox.
Right. I have also found a couple things. If you want someone to respond a certain way, you can tell them how to respond. So let's say, like again, I'm about to perform a cocktail party or strolling or a restaurant or whatever it is. You'll say, I'm going to show you something and you're going to think this is the most amazing thing you've ever seen. Or you're just going to say, how did I do that? You know, in other words, and a lot of times people don't know what to say except the response you'd already clued them to say. I don't know what to say. I've never seen anything like that. So after you're finished with that. Likewise, whenever I used to send out emails and with a thank you saying, hey, I could use a testimonial. I hope you enjoyed the show and it met your expectations.
Mm-hmm.
These kind of subtle kinds of words behind the scenes, basically, of how you want them to say, you exceed our expectations, et cetera, of whatever it is. So you're not giving them a form letter, but you're kind of saying, we hope that you enjoyed the show and that we made your job easier for you. So
right, there's little tips like that that they can,
that you,
right.
That you're the hero because you hired the right employee, you know, the right guy and or whatever. So those are little things, you know, that you can kind of put in their ear when, I guess, but on email. So
right.
Whenever they send that back to you, they're kind of restating what you've just said.
They help them write the letter.
That's kind of right. You've almost written the letter for them, and they just kind of have to reword it in their own words.
Right.
You know, kind of a thing. Again, you're not lecturing on how to promote yourself
Yeah, because I would have to redo that whole lecture, and I have. And there's so, you know, I was thinking about this on the way down when I would do that lecture. The older magicians would go, oh, wow. You know, if I would have known that, you know, 20 years ago, that would have been great, but I'm not going to do all that work now. Mm-hmm. And I kind of feel the same way now. It's like, oh, my gosh, Instagram and Twitter and LinkedIn and all these things. I'm like, I don't know if I want to do all that.
That's a good point. Do you?
I feel like I know how those guys felt.
Do you have to hit them all, or is there something that is going to be – I think it depends on your demographic. In other words, you might want to use TikTok to reach a certain group.
Right.
Or whatever. And so some for LinkedIn that seem more business oriented. So it kind of depends upon who your demographic is and what you're trying to reach.
Right. I mean, there's so much out there now besides just paper.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's true. I know you're on Facebook and Instagram and other, but you have to constantly
work at it. You've kind of,
Right. That's right. Because what happens, as I understand with Facebook, is you are irrelevant after an hour and a half. Because if you post something, it will stay there before something else comes over pushes it down further because of
down
the way their algorithms
feed.
Work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, down the feed. So after an hour and a half, you know, it's gone. So it needs to be something that is going to be constant and just ongoing to attract their attention, you know, on that then as well. And Instagram, I think a lot of the same thing then too, because Facebook, I believe, has purchased Instagram then as well. Now, as far as the shows you do, I recall seeing some years ago also you were doing some theaters as the Magic Lady. Do you still do that as far as a theater show, or have you just done that a couple of times? Or?
Well, now I'm kind of switched gears because I have this lecture called Those Magical Dames, and it's a lecture of the history of women in magic.
Okay.
And I put it together. The first time I did it was for a lay audience. I was asked by my local arts center for March, because March is Women's History Month, to put something together. So I'm like, hey, I'm kind of onto something here.
Yeah.
And I've sold it to libraries for adult programming. I was like, tunnel vision focus. Well, yeah, they have to have adult programs too.
Sure.
So now's what I'm doing. I'm putting together a performing arts center list so they can have the lecture and then a show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I'm going to package it. Hmm. So to go back into like doing the theater shows.
And with that lecture, are you still finding people? And how far back do you go? I mean, you just go back a generation or two?
No, I start with Adelaide Herman, of course, in the 1800s. I feature Adelaide Herman, Talma, Susie Wandis, June Horwitz, and then end with Lady Houdini, who is Kristen Johnson. So it starts you know, in the 1800s and it moves forward. And then after Kristen, I kind of...
Is she the one that does the Georgia Magnet?
Mm-mm.
No, okay.
No. She does.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yes.
She does the water. She has the record. You know, beat Houdini's record for the water torture.
Wasn't she also
tapes.
On Penn and Teller?
I don't think she's
no,
been on.
I may be thinking
Penn and
somebody
Teller.
Else then. Okay.
They do a lot of fairs. She and her husband Kevin Ridgway and
different ladies.
Christian.
Okay. Yeah. So there's just a few people, and so you kind of go in the past,
right,
and then go forward.
I mean, and then you know, I talk about we all stand on each other's shoulders. Yeah. So then I feature like some of the next generation below me, like Jessica Jane. Kayla Drescher, mm-hmm.
Lucy Darling.
Yep. I'm trying to think who else.
Oh, there are a lot. So
yeah.
Many women today. Yeah, Alexander Duvivier.
Right.
Golly. Yeah.
So I like show.
Connie Boyd is really
right.
Keeping us up to date on.
She's doing a great job.
She is. I get things from her all the time, you know, of women in magic. And it's not just people now, but also, I mean, Joni Spina. And then going back even further, she's finding these videos of different ladies and performing and just keeping that ever present mm-hmm. in our minds. Mm-hmm. Has she talked with you? Or
we've talked a little, and she has such a long list.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just waiting for my name, I think, to appear on the list because we've exchanged some emails about things, and I know I'm on her radar.
Ariane Black up in Canada, and
right?
She was in Vegas for a long time, has been working on a coffee table book
right.
Of women. You know about this?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So talk about that a little bit, if what you know about that.
Well, she's because I'm supposed to be writing the piece on Sunny Johnson, who is Kristen Johnson's mom. Lady Houdini's mom.
That's right. Okay, now it's...
Now it's coming back to
yes,
you?
Yes, so, yes,
and I'm like, I've got to get that to Arian. So, you know, I mean, it was a year ago Kristen asked me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, But it's a coffee table book, and so she doesn't need like a whole big story because she's just going to have little blurbs
right.
about each woman.
It's mainly for photos.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it goes back, I don't know how far. I mean... Well, let me take that back.
I think she's going to be like a two-volume set. So the first is going to be like up through the 1970s, and then mm-hmm. the next will be the 1970 through today.
Okay.
Which I think is a great idea to have a two-volume set.
Well, yes, mm-hmm. right. And again, all photos. On the other hand, Charles Green III is working on a book on Ionia.
I know. That's going to be great. I can't wait for that one to come out because there's not a bunch of... about her, and just like Talma, there's not much a lot on Talma.
How'd you find information on her then?
Basically online. I just did some mm-hmm. research online, and I really have to look at the museum, the American Museum of Magic in Marshall, to see if they have a folder on her.
Well, who inspired you?
Who inspired me?
Yeah.
Well, my dad's to blame to get me into magic.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, Neil Foster, because I took Chavez from Neil. And the only woman when I was coming up through the ranks was June Horwitz.
Okay. Because I remember Maria Schweder.
Right.
Mike Power's wife was taking the Chavez course.
Right.
Was she taking it around the same time
she
as
took
you,
it after me.
After you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Were there other women who were taking the class when you did?
Nope. I was the third woman to take it from Neil.
Wow. Okay. Who were the others before you?
Before was Lucy Smalley from the Detroit area, and she has now gotten out of magic and living in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And she changed her name. She now goes by Raven Tecoy.
Does she perform?
No. I wish she would. I wish she'd come back. And then I don't remember the first woman that took it from Neil, and she took it from Neil, and Neil even said that she kind of vanished.
Just vanish.
Yeah,
okay.
Vanish, just poof.
Okay. And because I'm always curious about that, when I was talking with Alexandra Duvivier recently when I was in Paris, she was inspired by seeing Lisa Mena.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah.
good.
And so, which is another name in magic who is a force.
Right.
You know, that she's been around
right.
you know, for quite some time and has done a lot for magic in general.
Mm-hmm.
Great trade show person and everything then too, and is helping communities that are impoverished.
Right. Her cause to wonder is a great idea.
Yeah, that's right. Have you ever thought about doing something kind of like that? I mean, charitable kind of a...
I don't know. I have so many ideas, and I don't.
The follow through is
right. Yeah, right.
You can appreciate that. Ideas, yeah, are great. So, talking about children's shows, then as well. Do you have a character when you go in to do a kids show? Like when you're standing in the living room in front of the fireplace, you know, for the kids and the moms are there drinking wine in the kitchen together. I mean, do you have like when you're doing festivals, you have a an outfit, and we'll come to that in a minute, but do you have a character?
I have two characters, but they're just for Halloween, I'm Wanda the Wacky Witch, mm-hmm. and at Christmas, I'm Christmas Carol, Santa's number one helper, elf.
Okay.
Like the head of the elves.
Okay.
So well, those are the only two theme ones. If it's a birthday party in May, I'm just Magic Lady.
Okay. And so as Magic Lady, do you wear like a tuxedo? You have
anything to buy a costume,
yes,
and a fun dress.
Okay.
And I have one that's like an Alice in Wonderland theme print, and another one is I don't know, they're just fun. I found them online. They're kind of retro looking. They're mm-hmm. kind of reproduction vintage dresses.
Okay. And that's what you wear?
Yeah, that's what I wear for my kid shows.
For kid shows. Uh-huh. Now, do you do strolling cocktail magic or anything like that for companies?
Sure.
Now, I assume that you wear like cocktail dress and something more elegant?
Well, I've really been thinking about this because I've been looking at, you can buy a tuxedo that's made for a woman. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about maybe getting one of those. They're just more tailored. They're more elegant looking.
And you can have the pockets made wherever you want and however you want.
Because now I bought a man's tuxedo jacket, mm-hmm. a small man's because of all the pockets.
Sure, of course.
And that's what I've used in the past, but I kind of want to...
And wear a dress then?
I kind of want to get it a little bit more feminine. Uh-huh. Yes, to wear a dress would be with it.
Okay.
Easy way to do it, you know.
As opposed to wearing tuxedo pants and men's pants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I would think so as well. And something by wearing having a handbag...
You can hang it on the back of the table and the mm-hmm. back of a chair, and you can have everything with you.
That's right. That's right. The reason I was asking about that, because it has to do with just women aging in magic and how do you age into a character. Whereas when a man ages, he's still wearing a tuxedo.
Right.
And unfortunately, some people are still wearing those flowery kind of ruffled shirts.
From a mariachi band.
That's right. That's right. From something in the 60s or whatever it is. Yeah. But I was talking, I've brought this up several times in previous podcasts where talking with Trixie Bond, that she and Lisa Mena and Becky Blaney were talking about their characters as they would evolve as we all get older. And Trixie had said, okay, well, I want to age into a character. And I'm talking about working for corporate audiences and everything, mm-hmm. too. That she would just dress appropriately in some sort of a cocktail dress, because that was what my wife had said also. And Kathy had said, I don't think they want to see some lady who's my age wearing a short skirt. And I said, well, of course they don't, despite how I would think. But I think as far as the audience goes, that it should be something more elegant, and they could appreciate that, and you'd look elegant mm-hmm. wearing whatever. So that's kind of the direction she had decided to go. Lisa, then, I think, was embracing this character of an older lady that was kind of cantankerous.
That's right. She did do that.
Yeah,
right. Like bag lady kind of almost.
I was not going to say bag lady because I recorded an episode with Lisa and I said bag lady. She said, no, I'm not a bag lady.
I know. I listened to that episode.
Yeah, because she was thinking the bag lady be like an old homeless lady. It's
right.
Like, no. It's just she carries a bag and she mm-hmm. would hit somebody. Like, I'm always thinking Ruth Buzzy on Laugh In. Okay.
Right.
Those of us who are of that age mm-hmm. remember her. And then, on the other hand, you had Becky Blaney, who had decided that I want to remain forever young. So she's still had some work done. So she, looks great and young, as well as keeping the same act and some of the same jokes and everything. But basically, where she was talking about being a beauty queen or one, Miss Mushroom or whatever, mm-hmm. and having these trophies or whatever, kind of keeping the same act, but trying to maintain that youth. So one is kind of tried to remain young, one has kind of embraced the current, and the other one is kind of, okay, I'm going to age into this person so I don't have to dye my hair any longer because I'm kind of
person. I'm kind of on Trixie's...
Lisa's.
Right. Yeah. I'm not going to dye my hair anymore.
Exactly. So that's what I was going to say. Do you see a character of you developing or aging into, or are you going to change? Are you going to stay where you are? Do you see anything that has changed in your act, I guess? This is taking me 5 minutes to get to this
right.
question. Are you changing? Have you changed? Do you expect to? And how will you, and into what?
Wow. I don't really never given that a lot of thought. Because I just...
Continue to do what you're doing.
Continue to do what I do.
Yeah.
And
it's just that at some point, I would think in all of our lives, the audience would not care to see me up on stage at my age, some age, mm-hmm. and doing whatever I'm doing. Or if I'm trying to keep current, it's like, what's that old guy doing trying to act like somebody wearing spandex,
right. I can see that point.
Whatever. Uh-huh. And same thing, I think, with some women, you know. And so how do you age appropriately
with
your act?
That's true, because like my manipulation act, I'm like looking at my dress going, I don't know if that's great dress to wear anymore.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really backless. And mm-hmm. Of course, I have, aging. I got some love handles, and I'm like, that just doesn't look good anymore. I have to look for a new dress, I think.
Well, same with me. I've had to buy new jackets and everything then, too. I don't want to have something that's going to be pinched in the front when I button my jacket.
Right.
So you don't want to look like you outweigh your outfit, or mm-hmm. if it gets to be too old. Again, we're talking about ruffled shirts or whatever. You
right.
know, just you need to kind of keep current with the fashion, I would think, then,
right.
too. So I was just curious to see if you had given that much thought as to what you're going to be doing and how your act would change.
Right.
But so you do still kind of a Chavez act when you're talking about manipulation and everything then, too. So is that something you think, aside from a demonstration of skill, the audience appreciates from the standpoint, it's like, wow, that's pretty cool?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
And the funny thing is that when you do the billiard balls, I don't know how many times people have come up to me and said, wow, the things you did with those eggs.
That's interesting.
And I'm like, okay. I let them believe that they thought they were eggs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but they're round. They aren't odd shaped.
Are they white?
Yeah, they're white.
Okay, so they're not like colored, red or whatever. So you don't do color changing billiard balls. Mm-mm. It's just, okay, they're billiard balls. Interesting. Do you use fakinis?
Yep.
Okay. Now, of course, fakini has since been, I think... someone else has taken over that company.
I think it's kind of like gone by the wayside. His son tried to keep it up for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it just kind of disappeared.
Well,
I don't know if anybody's making them anymore.
They are.
Okay.
A couple of friends of mine out in South Carolina, in Charleston, are making those.
Well, that's good. So
but you still got your old props.
I still have my from Frank Radke.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember Frank. So I just, but what I was asking, I guess, is, and you've answered the question, that of whether the audience responds to that or if that seems almost outdated, because they're seeing magic from Penn and Teller and Masters of Illusion, mm-hmm. and the kinds of things. I just wondered if Chavez is kind of, if you see that as being outdated.
I don't think so, because people still appreciate it as, like you said, a demonstration of skill. Mm-hmm. It's something that people haven't seen, that the mm-hmm. lay audience, if they have never seen any manipulation, because with my lecture, the history lecture, I do the billiard balls for Susie Wandis.
Mm-hmm.
I do the coin pail for Talma. And I have to do something for June, because people don't understand what close-up magic is.
Mm-hmm.
So I add a little magic into it, and people, they like it because it's pretty and they've never seen anything like it. And they think you're really talented because you can do those things.
Right. And June Horowitz, for those who don't know, and some of these other ladies, we'll talk about those in a second as well. But June was the first woman president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians, and is from Michigan.
Right.
And she passed. She lived to be 100, didn't she?
She was like a month shy of her, was it 102nd birthday?
Yeah, I think
and she was over 100. She was doing magic up until like the week before she passed.
I remember seeing her at a convention in the wheelchair and go over to talk to her, and she had cards or something in her hands. She said, let me show you something. And so
she had a quick wit. She still had that wit about her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, up till the end.
Mm-hmm.
And Sonny Johnson was the one who you were talking about earlier, who really was kind of a caretaker.
Right.
You know, worked with her.
We'd take her to all the conventions because yeah. June couldn't drive anymore.
Yeah. Now, Susie Wand is, I understand there's a new book that's out about her. I forgot who it was, somebody overseas.
Oh, Colby, what is his last name? But he's from Belgium.
Yeah.
Really nice guy. Great book. Well, you know, it's a...
Has that what you've used for research?
Well, now I have to retell Susie's story because I was telling it wrong.
Oh, really?
After I read
so
the book.
What do you say now?
So
tell me a little bit about her story.
Well, because, let's see, she was born into a show business family.
Uh-huh.
Her father... Basically, they traveled around Belgium in like a gypsy wagon performing. And Susie was born in that gypsy wagon.
In what year, approximately?
Oh, gosh. I don't have that.
In the early 1900s or late 1800s?
Was it the late 1800s? Yeah, or she might have been in the early 1900s. She was born. And what I was telling wrong, in her father's act, she did she had a violin act, and she was billed as Miss White Flower in the dancing violin. And I always thought the magic came first, and then she added that. It was the other way around.
Oh.
She did the dancing violin first, and the magic came afterwards.
The dancing violin.
Yeah, she billed herself as Miss White Flower and the dancing violin. So she played the violin and did a little dance routine with it.
So it wasn't something kind of like Norm Nielsen?
No.
Oh, okay. So she would just dance, and she was holding a violin.
Right, and playing violin music.
The violin
didn't do
something.
And so I was telling that wrong. What else was I telling wrong?
Where did you get the wrong or misinformation?
It was because the book wasn't out yet, and so I got it from the internet, researching mm-hmm. Susie, and you can find little blurbs out there.
Yeah, there was no book out about her until this one came out, right?
Right.
Okay. So it was just snippets of wherever you found, however.
She performed in Europe through World War I, World War II,
okay,
which was amazing that she did that, supported herself. That was something else, that she performed with her mother as the Wanda sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the story was that an agent said that a mother-daughter act isn't going to sell very good, and Susie's mother was young enough to be passed off as her sister. That story is all wrong. When they went to get visas, because they left Belgium and they went to Italy during World War I to perform. So when they got their visa, at the consulate, the guy said, "Oh, you're young enough to be, you look like sisters."
Hmm.
That's how it came about. It wasn't an agent. So I was telling that wrong, and that was in the book. Kobe's a great guy. I had him on a Zoom call, because I did a little lecture about Susie Wandis for the American Museum of Magic.
Okay.
They have a lecture series. They mm-hmm. The next one coming up is going to be Thurston, and Jim Steinmeier is going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I had him on the call, and he had to stay up to like 3 o'clock in the morning because it was 7 o'clock here. And he was a great guy. I look forward to meeting him someday.
Why did he decide to write a book about Susie? Did he meet somebody in the family, or what inspired him?
Because Susie is like a celebrity
over in Belgium.
In Belgium,
really.
And Colby's dad.
That's not her real name, obviously.
No, her real name is Jeannie Van Dyke.
Okay, so Van Dyke was more of a Belgian name.
That was a story that I told wrong, too. Well, she changed her name to Susie when she heard this song, If You Knew Susie.
Like I Know Susie.
Right. And then I was telling her story that her father changed the name to the Wandas because he thought it sounded more aristocratic than...
Hmm.
Than Van Dyke.
Okay. I thought it was because of magic wands.
Nope. And that, and actually, it wasn't even Susie's father that changed it. It was her mother that changed it.
Okay.
And her mother was, she was like an agent. She was really...
Kind of a, what do you call it, a TV mom or...
Well, she really wasn't a stage... Well, yeah, she was kind of a stage mother. She really drove Susie. But she was a very good businesswoman. It comes throughout in the book. Because she's the one that would do all the booking and all the promotional and...
Yeah. And we kind of controlled her career.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
Was her dad involved much in that?
Her dad died young.
Oh, okay.
And that's when they had they started performing then as the Three Wandas, because it was Susie, her mother, and her brother.
Okay.
After the Wandas. After, yeah, her father died. And then when her brother joined the Belgium Army in World War One, that's when they became the Wanda Sisters. So they changed the act, the name, a couple of times.
He never came back.
Nope, he never came back to magic.
So it became just Susie. I assume her mother died then?
No, well, then her mother aged out.
Aged out,
couldn't be passed off as a sister anymore.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then Susie had to choose, is she going to continue on? Because she still performed the violin act, too.
Oh, sure.
Okay. As part of the show when they were performing as the Wanda Sisters. Just to make the act longer, she would still perform as Miss Whiteflower and the Dancing Violin.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to choose between the two disciplines, because she liked that act and she liked being a magician, but then a female magician was going to sell a lot better, so she chose magic.
I see. Yeah, because there are probably few.
Then she became Susie Wandas, the Lady with the Fairy Fingers.
The Lady with the Fairy Fingers. Why? Mm-hmm. Because she was able to...
Her manipulations were... her manipulation. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Have you seen videos? Okay. So Talma, of course, with Leroy Talma and Bosco.
Right.
As I recall, she was quite a finger flicker too. She did a lot of coin work. Is
right.
that right?
Right. She sold herself as the Queen of Coins after she saw T. Nelson Downs, King of Coins, in London. That's what inspired her to learn a coin act of her own.
And was she then picked up by Leroy?
She was already married. She was already married to Leroy.
Okay.
When she saw T. Nelson Downs perform.
Oh, okay. So
then Leroy helped her with the coin act.
To add to his act.
Right. And then, she performed on her own as well, and then he added it to the Leroy, Tom, and Bosco show, too.
See, that was where I was confused. I thought that she had her own separate act, so that was it. She did, but kind of under his tutelage, if you will, after already being married and having seen that. And because I know then also Bosco was added later as well.
Right. Okay. And he was the comedy relief.
Right. And they lasted for a long time, which goes back again, full circle, I guess, and talking about aging out or whatever, because Leroy, as he got older, I understand he had attended some SAM convention, and he had performed, and people were saying how poorly that memory was of him performing.
Really?
Yeah, they said it was horrible. It was one of those things that he should have quit, so that way people have a better memory of the way he was, rather than him trying to prove he still had it, because he didn't have it at that point. So that's the thing. At some point, it's kind of like, you're starting to slip, and you have to recognize that, and kind of move out and move on. So she continued, and as I recall, too, the three of them broke up and kind of went, I say three of them. Bosco, I think, went his own way. They had a couple of different Boscos, didn't they?
I don't know, because there's not a lot to on them either. But they, let's see, where were they? They were in Belgium as well. And the act, I think, really broke up when Leroy and Tama moved permanently to the United States.
Okay, and Bosco stayed over there.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay, and you don't know whether he was replaced over here, Bosco, with their act?
No, I don't. From what I could tell, I don't think so.
So they just kind of faded out as far as Talma goes. Mm-hmm. That was her career was really more over in Belgium.
Right.
Now, prior to that, it was Adelaide Herman you were talking about.
Right, Adelaide Herman.
And she was also the wife, wasn't she? Because she had taken over after her husband died.
Right. After Alexander Herman was killed by he died on the road in the middle of a tour.
Was it a heart attack or something?
I didn't say that I've done what he died of, but I assume, it was a heart attack or something. And and they were deeply in debt because they were like
living a lifestyle.
A lifestyle.
Yeah, the train car and all that.
The train car, private yacht, big mansion on Long Island. And to pay the bills, she had to take up the reins as a magician.
Okay.
And that's how she became then.
And they didn't, the two of them have a child, and that son went on, and did he do something for a little while?
Gee, did they have a child? I didn't think they did.
Because I thought there was someone else after Adelaide. No? Or was she the last of the dynasty? Because there were some others, I thought, before Alexander. Unless I'm confusing that with another family.
I don't
dynasty.
Know.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know how much research you've done.
Yeah, because
into all
the
this.
Research that, I don't think they had any children.
Okay.
After seeing, because the real expert on Adelaide is Margaret Steele.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so you've got a lot of information from her?
Well, in her book.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's right. And where's Margaret, by the way? Is she, where's she live?
She's Midwest? She's New Jersey, the East Coast someplace.
Oh, okay. I've heard her lecture before then also. So you're still learning about some of these people. And
right.
How that your
research
was wrong.
Yeah, and it kind of starts you on a path to wanting to find out more.
Yes. Well, that was what I was going to ask next. As far as learning more, have there been some other women in magic that you've been wanting to expand to and thinking, okay, well, I'm inspired by this, I understand that, and so that touches this person's life? And because you've kind of got a path that you said of those five ladies.
Right, and I forgot, I include Del in there too, Del O'Dell.
Del O'Dell. Mm-hmm. Because she was just right after Susie Wanda's time, essentially.
Right, well, she was in like the
50s?
Yeah, the 40s, the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, she was on that tail end of the nightclub.
And Celeste Evans
the nightclub circuit,
then, right?
Yep.
Okay. Because Celeste just passed a few years ago.
Right.
Recently then, too, whereas Del O'Dell had gone before that. So.
Yeah, she died in 1962. I can remember that because that's the year I was born. Now they can do the math and figure out how old I am.
Here we are in 22. So, yeah. Okay. You're a young lady to me.
Oh, gee, thanks.
So now I want to go back to talking about some of the festivals that you were saying that you were doing. I was talking with you last evening thinking you had like a steampunk type of outfit, and you said that wasn't necessarily the case. It's kind of the 1800s, but not a steampunkish.
Yeah, it's kind of like steampunkish. Because I do wear a top hat, and it's more of an 1800s costume. I perform in a split riding skirt and a blouse
with poofy sleeves
and my top hat. And I started doing that for the Yankee Peddler Festival here in Ohio. It's the longest running festival in Ohio. Mm-hmm. It's like it's coming up on 48 years.
Wow.
And it's a 1776 is an early American festival. It's like a Renaissance festival, just a different time period.
Right. We're talking about like Civil War time,
right.
Basically.
Right. Civil War.
Frontier days.
Right. When Ohio was the frontier.
Right. Is that the one that you were saying also is kind of starting to falter?
Yeah, it's kind of on life
Last
support
legs.
Because they're losing vendors. The vendors are dying, and it's a juried show, and you have to prove that you are a crafter and you've made it yourself. You can't sell knockoffs from China or anything at the festival. And
what kind of things do they sell? I mean, are they pewter mugs? Or
yeah,
are
it's pottery, pewter mugs, leather, baskets, tin work. I'm trying to go around the festival, people's booze that I know, pressed flowers.
Okay, so it's not like a regular type of festival that I've been to where you just have somebody, a lot of artists with paintings some other people selling herbs and perfumes and jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that kind of a thing.
No, a little bit of jewelry, dried flower arrangements, mm-hmm. dried flower wreaths.
And that takes place where?
Outside of Canton, Ohio, in this little town called Canal Fulton.
Okay.
And the festival people rent a campground for 3 weekends in a row.
Okay. And so it doesn't go on during the week, only on the weekends.
Yeah, just on the weekends.
So do you camp there or do you drive over?
No, I come to stay. Since I live in northern Michigan, my parents live like 3 hours from the festival.
Mm-hmm.
So I come and I stay the whole month of September with my parents.
Yeah.
And I drive over early Saturday morning. And now I've made friends with one of the vendors. So I stay with her,
mm-hmm.
which is nice. And so I work Saturday and Sunday.
And how many shows a day do you do?
About four.
Are they on the clock or kind of as you've got to draw a crowd?
It's almost like busking. I can choose
okay.
when and where I want to perform. They
yeah.
give me free range and I have to stop the crowd and I don't use a lot of proppy, plasticky looking stuff.
Yeah.
I have a hand-tooled leather bag that I carry. They do let me carry all my stuff in a wagon so I don't have to schlep it around.
Yeah.
you
yeah.
know. But after doing it for so many years, I know the place is now in the festival where I'm going to get a good crowd.
What is your opening line or what do you do to draw a crowd? I mean, you know, you're not banging plates together.
No,
you're
I have
not juggling
a whistle.
Or anything.
And so, I blow a whistle.
Okay.
And I'm loud.
Yeah.
And
with a sound system? Or
nope.
Just your voice?
They won't let me use a sound system because it's not period. They're really...
That makes sense.
They're really... diligent about
you use a megaphone
being right. I know Taylor Martin uses one. He has because
okay.
he's got a period
Does he work the same festival?
No, he works, but he works a lot of the same kind of festivals.
I thought he did. Mm-hmm. Okay. And in Michigan as well.
Right. He does a big one, I think, in Pennsylvania, one in Tennessee.
I've seen pictures of him, like, on Instagram with the three-cornered hat. And
right,
stuff, yeah.
In Canada, but he hasn't been able to get in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. So it's fun. I really like performing that character. And she's kind of evolved over the years, and the people on the festival named me. They gave me her name. She's Charmin J.
Charmin J. Uh-huh. Charmin J.
Charmin J.
Okay. And since your costume is period and you can't use electrical sound system, do you try to recreate some period magic pieces? And like you say, you got a leather satchel that you're carrying, but I mean, I assume cups and balls and things perhaps would be standard because that's been around forever.
Right.
But are there other kinds of things? I mean, I wouldn't imagine you use like Mac Magic types of
things
with Chinese cuneiforms on
it. Nope. I do the linking rings. I do a card that... You force a card, but then you shoot a gun at it, and I have the breakaway gun, mm-hmm. and there's a bullet hole in their chosen card then.
Yeah.
So I do that. I dress a kid up.
Sounds like an old Carol Fox routine.
No, actually, it's a Terry Seabrook routine.
Okay.
It was in Terry's book.
Okay.
I do that. I do the paper hat tear, the bonnet tear, because it looks like a period bonnet.
Yep.
I buy lots of those
looks
for
like
September.
Betsy Ross, yeah.
Right. And I do, let's see, the linking rings, the bullet card, Professor's Nightmare, because it's rope and not plasticky.
Right. But you consciously are looking for things that will be more period appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you work other festivals then as well, or just...
I work other festivals. That's the only one I do that have the character for, right?
So the other ones, you can do anything that you want, like you would normally do when you're busking.
Right.
Okay. And what are your go-to things when you're generally busking?
When I'm busking? Well, linking rings, because they're loud, you can clang them around.
Right.
And I'm honestly, if I get a kid up first right away to help me out, that helps stop a crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, basically, I do a lot of the same magic that I do in that festival show for my busking show, and I'm just not in period costume.
Okay.
Because I know it works.
Sure.
And I do, the Chase the Ace, because it's the big cards,
mm-hmm.
and they can see them, and it's kind of like a swindle. The hat tear, linking rings, bullet card.
When you use a bullet card, when it has to do with a gun,
right.
I can understand that when you're doing that at the Yankee Gathering,
right.
or whatever the thing is. But on other places, when you would pull out, even though it's a funny-looking gun, it's a breakaway gun, have you had any pushback or anybody?
No pushback. And actually, I used to use a regular blank gun, and
yeah.
I got a little uncomfortable with that with all that's going on.
That's my point.
So that's why I did the breakaway gun, and then I have the old bang gun. And then I'm like, I'm going to get my pirate gun now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people think that's funny.
Because it's kind of goofy looking.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the bang flag comes out and they think it's goofy and funny.
When somebody's going to be working a festival, how did you go about approaching them? Was there someone else already working there? Did they have an open audition? Or how did you, again, just thinking of people who are looking for other alternate forms of revenue, and perhaps if they want to go into busking at a festival, how do you go about finding that kind of a job?
Well, I found a booklet someplace that was all of the festivals east of the Mississippi.
Oh.
And so then I put together a list of like Indiana, Michigan, Ohio. And that's back when I was doing all my direct mailing.
Yeah.
And that's how I got my festivals then.
Hmm.
And also, you stop at all these like welcome centers where they have all the brochures,
mm-hmm.
and they have a whole booklet, like get their summer festivals, their winter festivals, and I would take those and I would put together my own mailing list from those.
So okay.
I got it for free. I didn't have to buy a list. It took a little bit of work, but that's how I did it.
Yep. If you want the if you want a job, you got to do the work to get the work.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know many female buskers. Billy Kidd's the only other one aside from you that comes to mind. Have you run into many or talked with any female buskers?
There used to be. No, just there's Tommy Tropic, who is a great busker in northern Michigan. He's a juggler.
Mm-hmm.
And he dated a girl years ago, and that was the only other busker I knew. female busker. They met busking in Key West in the wintertime, and that was the only other female I've.
And is she still busker?
I don't know. You know, since they broke up, that relationship broke up. I don't know what happened to her.
Right. Yeah, because I would think that'd be difficult for a woman because you are carrying a lot of cash with you, and you're working sometimes in good areas and sometimes not necessarily, or there are big groups of people.
Right. And so, that's why I like the bucket, because I can have a lid on it.
Oh, I see.
And I cut a hole in it.
Yeah.
And they can't see how much money I have in there either.
Oh, I see. Okay. As opposed to having a hat.
Right.
They can kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they don't necessarily. Have you ever had any situation where you felt like you were in danger?
Nope. Not yet.
Okay. I don't want to jinx this thing.
Nope. Okay. I have kids look in and go, oh, wow, there's a lot of money in there.
Yeah. But have you ever, just for the heck of it, said, I think I'm going to give this a try on the street over here, like, you know, when you're in a mall, or if you go to Key West or something.
I mean, that's true busking.
That's what I mean.
That's tough work. I've never really done that. The busking gigs that I have do in northern Michigan this summer, it's the town puts it on, mm-hmm. and
they're sponsored events.
They're sponsored events, and mm-hmm. and they do it, so they're going to have entertainers show up every week.
Okay.
So we are contracted, and they do that. So, you know, if it was just a true busking where it was a free-for-all for anybody,
right.
there would be some days or some weeks where they would have way too many entertainers. And there would be some weeks that they wouldn't have enough. So that's why they and we get paid a little stipend, and then we get to work for tips to keep all of our tips.
Yeah, because you're not worried. You're not so thinking about going to, like, New Orleans.
Right. So I've never done, you know, that's I don't know. I suppose I could do it, but that's tough work.
Have you followed and been inspired by people, you know, like Cosmo, you know, and Cellini and some of these others?
Who is, why can't I think of his name?
Jeff Sheridan.
Right. Bobby Maverick. He was a great busker. And
Eric Evans.
I've lost contact with
Chris
him.
Chris Capehart.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I just wondered if any of those guys, you know, kind of inspired you to.
It was Bobby, watching Bobby at the get together.
Mm-hmm.
And he really helped me out and took me aside and said, this is what you got to do.
And you and John Sterk are the only people I can think of who do busking. Are there some others that kind
of? Oh, yeah. John Sterk, myself, Torino, John LaChance, even Bibic filled a couple of spots. Hmm.
So is that something that you're going to continue to do? You really enjoy?
Sure, it's fun. It's just, you know,
and
it's good.
Fun.
Yeah, it's fun. And people that come to Colon when they find out about the Magic Festival.
Yeah.
They expect to see that.
Sure.
So it's a good thing that the chamber started doing it.
Right, because they got something to do during the daytime for people
right.
who are tourists coming in, because there's not a lot of stuff
there's not a lot to
see
do.
Or do in
And they're
Colon.
Like, where's all the magic?
Right. If they are coming in for the evening show, what are they going to do in the afternoon?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they got to go downtown and see the buskers.
Right.
That is a lot of fun, and I certainly enjoy that. Well, listen, name my podcast, as you know, and you listen. You listen, don't you?
I do. I listen. You're my coach in the morning. You're my. I listen when I'm working out.
Thank you very much.
So you have to, like, start cheering me on or something.
When you start to stretch, that's
right.
So what is your magic word or phrase?
It is nice. Nice gets you a long way. Be nice, be friendly.
To everybody. Be nice to everybody, because it gets you a long way.
Right. It gets you a long way. And mm-hmm. even just, you know, the cashier girl, she might be having a bad day, and just be nice to her. And
mm-hmm. Yeah. Not because you're trying to get something out of it, but just because you're a nice person.
Right.
Yeah. Be nice to everybody, because that's just what you should
right.
do.
Right. Yeah.
Basically.
And being nice gets you a long way.
Yeah. It might open doors, but again, that's not ultimately what you're looking for. But great advice. That's good. Janie, thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott.
Glad we had some time to chat. Boy, that time went fast.
I know. How long was that? Really? Is it time for dinner?
Yeah. It's just about time. In fact, I just got a text over there. We're supposed to be going to dinner here shortly. So we got to get ready. So
okay.
For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Janie Taylor. This is Scotty out. Well, Jania, thank you very much for being my guest this week. And again, I apologize for not having a chilled martini for us to enjoy. But again, for the listeners' benefit, it's probably better we weren't too soused, too deep into the martinis for us to record this episode here this week. So I hope everyone enjoyed that, got a lot out of it. And I hope also you get a chance to see Jania give her presentation on Women in Magic. I have personally not yet seen it, but I'm anxious to see it someday soon. And I know it's going to be great. Well, I think that's going to be a wrap here for this week. And next week, we're going to be coming up with episode number 666. I know that sounds rather ominous, and perhaps it might be. We will see how this turns out. So please come back and join us again next week. And if you'd like to know what's going to be happening from week to week and who's going to be coming up on each podcast, please be sure to subscribe to our pod letter. And you can do that by going to themagicwordpodcast.com. And there you'll see a place where you can subscribe quite easily. Anyhow, thank you very much again for joining us this week. And so until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember, be nice. This is Scotty out.